Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Jasmine from On My Block. I don't care what any of y'all say, I have the biggest crush on the baddest bitch on that show, and I don't think too many men are worthy of her, especially on that show. But I also haven't seen the newest season of On My Block, so this is a reminder to please go watch that shit.
Now streaming on Netflix. Yeah, Jessica Marie is a bad bitch. I love her. Like, I'm glad that they're giving her a lot more screen time this season. So check it out.
Yeah, I'm so glad they're centering a, like, bigger woman, and she's, like, the baddest, most confident, like, confident bitch on that show, so I love her.
The original Rosa.
Hey!
What up, cabrona?
What's poppin', chingona? Was good. We're alive. We're indoors. We haven't left. Well, that's a lie. We've gone because capitalism. We have to leave. So shout out to everybody that's staying indoors and being healthy. This coronavirus is not a joke. It is real deal. We all know someone who's immunocompromised. So why don't you just not be an asshole and stay home and mind your business if as much as you can. How have you been coping, Maitha?
I don't know that I have been coping. I've been pretty mad about everything. If you follow me on Twitter, you know I've been mad at everything.
Oh god.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, like, you know, stay, like, afloat.
Sane.
And yeah. So hopefully things don't worsen. I don't know. I'm trying to be hopeful, but shit's looking pretty dire.
Yeah, how's, like, LA reacting? Is there food? Is there groceries? Is there anything there?
Grocery stores are pretty damn packed these days. Luckily, we're not like New York. We don't have bodegas, but we do have liquor stores everywhere, and you can find a lot of stuff there. You can find toilet paper there. You know what I mean? Like, if the worst comes to worst, so.
Yeah. Shout out to the liquor store toilet paper. I stand. Yeah. That's a big fucking deal. Like, shout out to all the alcoholics that can actually get their toilet paper. I can't find shit out here. Fuck you, Texas.
I don't understand. Fucking... Like, why do you need, like, 5 weeks of food? Like, just get 1 week, and then next week, you can go again. Like, yes, what the fuck? Dude. I don't know.
It's if y'all were just not assholes, we'd be able to be all right. I had to be like double the price for groceries just because people suck and I hate them. So, especially in Texas, you can fit more shit in your truck. I hate people.
Yeah. Oh god, I can't even imagine. That's horrendous.
So I mean, as long as you're like stuck inside, I mean, we recommend watching some shit. What have you been watching, Maitha?
On My Block for sure. I've been watching stuff that we're gonna talk about today. I've been watching The Circle Brazil. It was pretty good. You can kind of start to see like how they cast, because there's like, you'll find like the character that, like, you know, like the people that play these particular roles, they already played them in the original The Circle, so I don't know. I like that kind of shit. It's pretty good. So I've been watching The Circle and Desus and Mero. Desus and Mero, I tweeted about it today. I can't think of anybody funnier than them. Like, they're so hilarious. They're the best. That's who you should listen to. Them and The Read, as really the podcasters. They both have shows. Go watch that shit. Like, you can watch the news and like not feel like dying, because like they make shit, you know, funny and entertaining and stuff and informative.
I love Desus and Mero, and then The Read, of course, every Tuesday now versus Thursday, so we're doing better there. I broke my quarantine to like go buy Criterion Collection movies. I'm starting my Almodóvar like journey, so I've already seen like Mala Educación, I think that's what it's called. And then I have another one all about my mother. So I'm really excited.
Awesome. And if you have a library card, mm-hmm. you can watch movies for free on Canopy. I don't know if you guys know that.
Yes, you guys, get your library card. I have not gotten my
you
library
should,
card.
You should, dude. Especially. Well, I mean, I guess right now the libraries are open. Yeah, they're not open right now. Shout out to the library workers because they still have to work, even though the libraries are closed. But yeah.
Shout out Library Bay for for giving us your work and labor and all the Library Bays across the United States. We need y'all. But yeah, no, I've just been watching Criterion Collection and laying around listening to music because we have a really, really fun episode today. And I'm kind of excited to talk about it. But before we get into that, Maitha, what are your top five songs you're listening to right now? Go.
Oh, my God. I mean, right now I'm listening to nothing but Lauv, but I don't want to just recommend all of Lauv's discography. So I wrote down songs that I've been constantly going back to either my whole life or like the past year. So that's kind of what my list is. And that's why it's so fucking like out of like, there's no rhyme or reason to it. They're all completely separate songs.
No.
but one of them is Slip Away by Perfume Genius. And this song, when I heard it on Booksmart, like stole my heart. And I've listened to it 100 bajillion times since then, literally.
And we love a queer artist.
Yeah, and he's wonderful and gender bending, and I hear he's a great performer. So yeah, that's one of them. Let's go back and forth. How about you do one, I do one, etc. If you're done.
Okay, the one I've been listening to obsessively, just because I've been waiting for this like song since last year, it's called Morocco by Alina Baraz. The first like 30 seconds of the song are everything to me. And I just put it on repeat so I can hear the first 30 seconds of that song over and over again. the rest of the song is like cool, but the first 30 seconds blow my mind every time.
It's like when you listen to a preview of a song on like iTunes to see if you want to buy it or not, but you just listen to that same 3 seconds over and over again.
Yes, I put on a loop and I pretend that's the entire song, and that's what gets me through.
Nice.
What's your number two?
Mine are not in any order, by the way. But number two is Bossa No Se by Kuko, because it just has this like anger that in beat. It that I relate to and I love so much. Like this, because you know everybody talks about how like love and hate are like a fine line away from each other, and as far as emotions go. And that's kind of what that song is, right? He's like, I don't know if I hate you. I don't know if I love you. You know, it's, I love it. And I know that it's like, I can see that being like problematic from a feminist standpoint, but I've been there. I'm like, fuck, I don't know what I feel. I just know that I'm feeling a lot.
The beat on that song right at the beginning, I love, 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 love. And then I just skip the song because I don't like Kuko. But the first like 10 seconds, I'm like, this beat is everything.
That's funny.
So I love that. I love those first 10 seconds. It's lit. My number two is Ay, Ay, Ay by Daniela Andrade. She is a Latinx artist. I actually really like a lot of her art. She centers like immigrant parents. She kind of speaks from that experience of being like a kid and being Latinx in the United States while your parents are immigrants. So I think it's really cool. And this song is just like in Spanglish and it's beautiful. And it's like Latinx R&B. I love it.
Nice. So the next one put on was La Vie en Rose. And to me, it's like I've been obsessed with it since I heard it on How I Met Your Mother. And then Lady Gaga did the French version on A Star Is Born. I just think it's such a beautiful song. I don't have like much more of a reason other than that. I just think it's a boss ass song in all its iterations. My favorite, because it's the first time that I heard it, was on that episode of How I Met Your Mother, where the mother like sings it in with her little ukulele. But Lady Gaga's version is also very nice.
Ooh, okay, Lady Gaga. And she, I mean, that's a badass version of like La Vie en Rose. Number four for me is Bruise Boy by Gene Dawson. It's really weird and shoegazy and not shoegazy. And he's a biracial, like Mexican black kid from California. And I stan. He used to live in Mexico and drive to the United States every day. So I think it's very cool his sound is very unique. It's not for everyone, but I really, really fuck with his like aesthetic and his sound. So Gene Dawson.
Nice. My next one, I chose this song because it was kind of the obvious choice, but really it's this whole artist who deserves the credit, but Amor Prohibido by Selena, which is our theme song on this show. And I just listened to Radio Menea's episode about Selena with Favi, and they talk about Amor Prohibido and how queer people have sort of taken it as their own thing, because Amor Prohibido, like, for straight people, it's like, okay, shut up. But but yeah.
Not about you.
Yeah. So that song, and really Selena in general, was like the soundtrack to my entire life growing up in Dallas with nothing but women who were immigrants and like were trying to keep me entertained, I guess. Apparently I've been in love with Selena since I was 2 years old, so I don't know. But yeah, Amor Prohibido.
Queen. I mean, it's been reclaimed by all the queers. That's the song we claim the hardest. Indeed. So I love that one. Number four for me is La Santa by Bad Bunny, just because, of course. And it's surprisingly my favorite song off that album. Of like, there's a lot of songs on there that are for everyone, right? But, you know, Las Afuera, Yo Preo Sola, but La Santa just has like a really like interesting vibe, and it's like my favorite workout song right now. I know it's not like upbeat, but I think that's the whole point, and I'm obsessed, and I love Daddy Yankee's verse on it, so it's a beautiful song.
Nice. My last one is Si Te Vas by Shakira. Shakira is just another artist
that
I blast like forever and always. She's the first concert that I ever went to. Her first two albums are like my life. And Si Te Vas was the first song that I ever learned the guitar, so that has a special place in my heart too. So yeah, that's another one. I blast it whenever I can.
This is barefoot Shakira, right?
Yeah, like pre-blonde Shakira is my Shakira.
Yes, I love it. My favorite is Purple Wig.
That's a good Shakira. One. I love that song.
Iconic, and also did something to my heart. It changed my life. Anyways, my last song is Fubu by Fubu, like the clothes, by Ambry. She's like a like queer artist who's written like Honey by Kalani. She's written like all the gay songs for Kalani, and now she's kind of gone on her own, and she's openly singing to women, and it's also just like a really good vibe and very R&B, and I love it. And shout out to her for openly singing to women, so I stan. As you might have been wondering why we're doing our top five today, we'll be talking about two very different separate things, but we're bringing them here together because we feel it's timely. The top five is going to be put on the Spotify soon. And we're talking about it today because we're talking about High Fidelity. And what will you be talking about today, Maita?
Gentified. It's this new Netflix show, Gentified. Gentified. And yeah, so the songs are inspired by High Fidelity. I think that the two have more in common than we give them credit for. They're both very much about, like, emotional shit, you know?
They're very, very emotional. Different, like, different complete stories, different coasts, different lifestyles. But I think that's pretty beautiful to just see, like, brown and black folk out here being, like, the centers of their universes on these shows. And I think that's so important and so cool and rare to see.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so now is our dilemma. Who would like to go first?
Let's just go chronological. High Fidelity came out first, so we'll go first.
Cool. Okay, so High Fidelity is an adaptation of a Nick Hornby book by the same name. It's also already has a movie, which came out, in the mid-90s with John Cusack as the lead. So it was a white guy being a music snob in the 90s. Haven't seen the movie. Pat said it was pretty good, so I'm gonna trust her on that. but it's only relevant because the whole concept, you know, it's already been done, and I like how they remade this version where they took John Cusack as the male white lead and they threw in our new fave, the person I didn't believe in before this project, Zoe Kravitz. Now Zoe Kravitz plays Rob. She is a vinyl store owner in New York City in Brooklyn. She has two employees, one her ex-boyfriend, who is now a queer man named Simon, and her other coworker named Charisse, played by the lovely Miss Divine Randolph. I love her. She is getting over a ex. She's in complete heartbreak during this entire show, trying to get over her ex-boyfriend, Mac. And on the way, she meets a lovely, boring, plain white man named Clyde. And shout out to him. He has terrible taste in music and yet somehow is still completely super sweet and probably kind of perfect for her. But I love that this universe doesn't center necessarily people that make sense, people making right decisions. Zoe Kravitz's character is very like conflicted and trying to make peace with herself and her inner demons, because for most of the show, we don't know the same things that she does. She's an unreliable narrator. There's things that she's hiding from us and hiding maybe from herself a lot as well. And so we follow this whole journey as Rob goes back through her top five biggest heartbreaks, and that's never a good idea. So her doing her going back, I mean, and trying to talk to all her exes.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, that's sometimes a bad idea.
Not all of them, you know. Some of them you really just, you're out of my life forever and I hate you, like Simon. Shout out to Simon, our lovely, lovely, lonesome loser man, queer man that is out here just living his best life. But I love this fucking show. Before this, I did not believe in Zoe Kravitz as an actress. Now, I am super hyped to see her in anything she does, because I feel like she was highly underused in Big Little Lies. Now that I'm watching High Fidelity, I know that she was underused in that show. The way that she leads this entire series, as someone who is both egotistical, pessimistic, but also extremely likable, extremely charismatic. The show does this interesting thing where she's breaking the fourth wall constantly and leading us into her life, which is cool. It's gimmicky, but it actually works in this way because it's kind of told as a first-person narrative. Yet, at the same time, the show does something really interesting. By towards maybe the middle end of the entire series, there's only 10 episodes, and towards the middle end of this series, the show takes a really different turn and gives us a completely different perspective. And instead, Simon gets his entire own episode and he becomes the lead. And I am obsessed with his episode, and I know you are too, Maitha. So let's get into that episode a little bit first, just because he's actually openly queer, and then we'll come back to Zoe. He does queer things a little bit, who's doing a lot of straight things really, and the music is fantastic, but we're gay, so what we care about is gay shit. So let's get into Simon.
Yeah, for sure. And before, just a quick note, the movie version of High Fidelity came out in year 2000.
Really?
Yeah. And Lisa, you're probably gonna mention this later, but Lisa Bonet is in it, who is Zoe Kravitz's mom.
Yes. And I love how they change that, right? Like, they go from...
Yeah, they're like, Lisa Bonet should have been the lead. Now she kind of is, you know?
She should have been the lead back in 2000. More interesting than John Cusack, honestly. And she's beautiful enough for me to be convinced that she has 20,000 exes. Yeah. Unlike John Cusack, who's just a born white guy.
Well, but I love that her name is... Like, real quick again. Her name is mm-hmm. Rob. And, like, John Cusack's original character was named Rob.
Rob.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this.
Yeah, like you said, towards the end of the series, Simon decides he's going to do this silly thing that Rob has been doing and go back over his five most, like, all-time worst heartbreaks or breakups or whatever. The name of this episode is called Ballad of the Lonesome Loser.
His words about himself.
Yes. I love it. I love this guy. I love it. Like, at first I was like, this guy's kind of basic. But then after this episode, I was like, am I Simon?
Damn.
So, yeah, not all of us have, like, a plethora of relationships and breakups that we learn ourselves through, like Rob does. Simon is a poor fool like myself who kind of goes all in on love. Like, so in that we get kind of stupid. And it's like, I know I'm not the only person that's gone through this, but it's like that relationship that everyone just tells you, like, it's not gonna work, but you're blind to it, like, you don't care. And so it's Simon, his first his first breakup or whatever, it's he gets ghosted by Ben, like, and Ben is this like super successful dude, and then Ben comes back and he's all apologies and all remorse and the feelings are still there, so they just jump back into it. Like, what's a second chance gonna hurt? And it hurts a lot. It hurts a lot because he has to go to the to get a little test at the nurse's office because Ben, while Simon was mourning during their breakup, Ben was moving on, let's just say that, and passed on a little souvenir in the form of an STD.
So, in the form of an STI. Everybody get tested out there. Please do. Be safe.
And to me, like, the STD was interesting because the STD is not always an STD. Like, sometimes what they pass on is trauma that they get from these other people when they come back into your life, or bad blood or whatever. Ooh. The point is that, like, Ben comes back with baggage, right? So whatever, Simon does the smart thing. He dumps him and he tells himself that he's done for good this time, you know? And, but no, Ben, comes back again and with a promise of this real commitment that Simon has been wanting, because that's literally it. Like, people like Simon, they just want like that real shit, you know? But Ben's a fucking scumbag, so he Jedi mind tricked him, as Simon described it, and he brings him back in with that. And there's these lines, and he kind of like, he's narrating it as this is happening, where Ben finally says, "I love you," or whatever. And Simon's narrating it, and he's like, "I thought he loved me for me, and I wish I'd known that it wasn't going to last. I would have enjoyed it more." It's like, these are anthems of the non-serial monogamer. Like, and yeah, so Ben ends up being a shithead still. And Simon's honest, like, a part of it is his insecurities being really, really bad. But Ben ultimately is a shithead. So Simon is better than a lot of us. He, after the fifth time, and Ben is coming back again, trying again after a year of not talking, and the Ben of the larger sense, like, this person is gonna suck the life out of you over and over again if you keep letting them, Simon breaks the cycle, inspiring lonesome losers like myself all over the world. But I love it because it you know, each separate time, like, it's not just one relationship, you know what I mean? It's like different relationships where you've grown, where he's probably not changed, quite honestly. They're still the same person that's gonna fuck you up, but he has changed after each of these breakups, and I think that it was a amazing single episode.
I mean, the things that stood out for me for Simon's episode is that, of course, when he talks about his top five crazy heartbreaks, they are just one person. And I think that was pretty cool because he was talking about, like, maybe the queer man experience, you know, like, where you don't date a lot of people seriously, as you say, a non-monogamous, someone who doesn't really want to be monogamous. And I feel like in this episode, you really get to see, like, just, like, queer story, and there's no, like, trauma necessarily about being queer. It is all just normalized, like, the relationship itself. It's just about, like, two dudes that are toxic. Like, well, one dude that's toxic and Simon, who's lovely, and I want to give him a big hug. He's just really going through it because, I mean, it's hard. And that's, like, this whirlwind ransom. Wow, I'm thinking of another, like, Ransom is the name of someone else. Anyways, Knives Out. I finally saw it. this romance that he has with this man, and he goes back and forth. And I think it was amazing to watch, just like queer people be queer, and there's no like violence. It's just violent because one of them sucks and he's just like total trash, and everyone has to learn that lesson. And I thought that was cool that we're allowed to see a queer man learn that lesson, and I thought that was really, really dope. Also, there's this really, really interesting little, I don't know, idea of disco in the episode that really, really turned me on to disco, and now I fuck with disco as a genre. I didn't like it, and now I fuck with it now. Fuck yes to disco. And I love Simon. He needs all the hugs, and hug all the Simons in your lives, guys. They need it. We need to break these toxic queer cycles that we're in, where we think we're not, you know, worthy of love because there's not a lot of queer folk out here, period. So
it's a very hopeful episode in that way, right? Like the ending of it, which I don't want to really spoil. There's another whole thing going on, but yeah, I love that, like, Simon is almost like a beacon of hope, and that there's not a single mention of Grindr. That's nice.
Yes, he's not like doing apps. He's just like
some
I'm
of
a
us
human
fucking
person.
Hate apps. You know what I mean? Like, some of us don't want to touch that shit with a 10-foot pole.
I don't think anyone wants to touch that shit with a 10-foot pole. Oh my god, let's not. But anyway, Simon, he's one of the best parts of High Fidelity. I loved him before this. I thought he was just a music snob, but once the show changed and became about him for an episode, my little, you know, side character dreams happened, so I was in love. This show's great. Okay, now we're gonna move back to Zoe Kravitz, who isn't exactly straight. One of the coolest things about this show, and when she goes back into her five biggest heartbreaks, is there's someone called Kat. Now, Kat, like everyone else she's dated, is white. but at least, she is a really actually super interesting character. Rob's ex, Kat, the one woman that she dated, the one woman that broke her heart, left her for another woman. They did something really interesting where they actually brought up race, where she said that because Rob gets left by this woman. I'm going to ruin it just to say this because they do bring up race.
I mean, it's a breakup, so it's like, you know, we know that she's going to get left in each of these situations.
Right, it's not too much of a spoiler. But she leaves her, but Rob says that she leaves her because she likes more blonde white girls. And I was like, word, we're actually going to talk about race in this one instance right now for just 1 second. This is cool. And I liked her ex, Kat. She gave me like Libra rising, like Capricorn vibes, because she was very much just like, oh, this is all bullshit. I'm just here to get paid. And I'm here for the ride as long as I'm getting paid. And that's it. And I feel like she actually was also super able to read Rob in a way that none of her exes were able to do the same. She, instead of like all of the men she's dated, this one woman who's kind of a narcissist and asshole, at the same time is actually able to understand and see Rob in a way that I don't think these other characters were able to see Rob. She was like, no, you're just like a little bit lost. You're always trying to find yourself. You don't really know who you are. You're unsure.
When she calls her out and like, yes. On like, because this whole time we've been seeing her like kind of spiral a little bit, and then all of a sudden this ex is just like laying it out for her. I was like, god damn, girl, talking about emotional intelligence,
so much of it. And she seems, you know, like a super like a materialistic bitch. Surface person. Yeah, she is a bitch, but at the same time she's a bitch that's emotionally intelligent. She's aware of her fake ass Instagram influencer lifestyle, and she's like, I don't know, it pays the bills, I don't give a fuck, I'm gonna drink this beer with you. And so I really thought her character was very interesting, and shout out to Rob for dating someone who was that capable of going, you know what, I'm not the problem, but we just shouldn't be together, and there's no need to rehash, right? Goodbye. So shout out to the one woman who was intelligent. Now the rest of the show, what Rob does is very straight, but it's very cool to me because the show itself isn't just talking about heartbreak. What originally Nick Hornby wanted to do and what he said in his book was more talking about it doesn't matter what you're like, but it matters what you like. So your taste actually is supposed to be representative of how good of a person you actually are, how cool of a person you are. So his basis for the book was to say, I'm not me, I'm the things that I like. And so there's one really interesting episode where I think the show actually explores that concept a little bit deeper. Do you know what episode I'm talking about, where Zoe Kravitz goes to buy this music collection?
Oh, the one where she like is really dealing with her like moral like standing and stuff.
Yes, it's like the moral standing of all like music snobs, right? She goes to buy an art collection that's extremely rare. It has all of the David Bowie vinyls she's always looked for, right? The originals. So it's like a music snob's dream collection. But she somehow can't buy this collection for $20. She thinks it's priceless. She thinks she wants to meet the person who has made this collection, because in her mind she thinks, okay, if you have great taste, you must be a cool, awesome, amazing person, and if you have taste like me, you must be like me. And when she meets this man, she finds out that he's a misogynist, he's a dickhead, and he absolutely deserves to be stepped on by every woman, and not in the fun way, the like I hate you way, because he sucks
so bad.
And I think this is
I just want like every white man that likes music to watch this just so that they can see themselves in this guy.
Yes.
And then like have their minds blown. But go on.
No, and that's what I thought was interesting, because they kind of warped the idea of the music snob man from the original High Fidelity book, and they insert him into this movie and actually make him movie into this show and make him deeply unlikable and a misogynist asshole. Like all these guys that are like, well, name five songs. Well, how about you lick my ass from the back, dickhead? Like, no, thank you. Well, actually, no, I wouldn't want. Anyways,
don't do that.
Not
please,
a man.
Fuck off.
Anyways, whatever. And she has to make peace with the fact that, you know, she still can't do it. She still has this warped idea of people based on their taste. While she's on a date with the dude that really likes fish. And I don't know what fish is because I'm not that unseasoned. I know they are banned. I know white people like them. And that's all I know about them. Maybe one day I'll maybe try it, but I'm good. I'm sure they don't even fucking try to listen to Bad Bunny or, you know, fucking Evie Queen. So I really don't feel like I need a deep cut fish. Anyways, but that's what I thought was very interesting. And by the end of the show, she does something very interesting with something that she thinks is extremely valuable and super rare. And her music snobness at the end, I think they make a point of it, because it's, I'm not going to ruin that because that's kind of interesting to me. It's not really talked about a lot. I think it was a little too subtle in the way that they made that placement of that David Bowie record at the end. And I don't know what that actually says about her character development and her growth. I don't know if she's saying that now she doesn't give a shit about like music snobs. She cares about the person. I'm not really sure she's quite there yet, but that's why I hope there's a season two to this, because this was an amazing show. I give it 5 fucking pan dulces just because I will watch Zoe Kravitz lead me into the darkness. Like, I would go into hell for her, and then she tells me to turn around. I will turn around for Zoe Kravitz. Let's do it.
Shout out to
she says, turn around, baby. I got you. I'm turning around. But shout out to, is she playing Catwoman?
Is she?
I think she's playing Catwoman. Oh. Shout out to Catwoman. I'm hyped for it. And this show deserves all of your watches, all your reviews. I mean, if you're into music, if you're into like any kind of top 5 obsessive list, if someone's ever made a playlist for you, if you made a playlist for someone, they probably love you. And if not, they love you platonically. Make a friend. Anyways, make more playlists for your friends and go watch High Fidelity. What did you think?
I loved it. I started it and I was just kind of like, I don't know why I wanted to watch it, if I'm being honest. I didn't expect anything queer out of it or anything. I just kind of like put it on. And
Zoe Kravitz.
Yeah, I wish I could remember why I put it on, but I just did. And then I was like, oh shit, like, is this good?
It's surprising. It's surprising.
Yeah, like, I remember this moment where she goes to like a venue, and she sees this like young white guy singing a cover of a song or whatever from like a shitty boy band or whatever, not a shitty one, but like a boy band, and and she's thinking to herself like, why do I like this? That's kind of the feeling that I got where I was like, why do I like this? It's so straight, you know what I mean, like that type of thing. And I ended up loving it. I ended up loving it so much, just like she liked the guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's a cute interpolation of like High Fidelity, the book. It's been a remix. It's made better. I do want more Charisse next season.
We didn't talk about her at all. She's fantastic.
I know. I forgot. I was like, I love her. I'm obsessed with her. We need more black women who are allowed to just be black women, and also incredibly interesting artists. They make very interesting comments about Kanye West, Michael Jackson. There's a lot of interesting current topics about actual artists. And if you're just obsessed with music and pop culture, this is your show. And Charisse deserves like 3 episodes next season. I'm obsessed with her journey. I'm obsessed with her getting a guitar. I can't wait to what they do next season. I hope it happens, and I want more of her. I need more black women just being black women. That would be fabulous and great. That's all I want.
Yeah, it's like she didn't get that much screen time, but she still like won all of us over. Like everybody was always waiting for her reaction to certain things. And yeah, she stole the show every time she was on screen, so I can't believe she didn't get more screen. I think for that only, I would probably say half a Gussie though, because like they needed to have done better on that on the first season, you know what I mean? We can't always be playing makeup.
No, you can't. No. And you know, hopefully they do it next season. If they do, maybe they'll get 6 banduses from me if they include more Charisse in there, because these are all the things I'm obsessed with, like music list, playlist, just all of this shit is all my look, all for me, just chef kiss, chef kiss, chef kiss. I love this. But anyways, let's talk about your topic today.
Gentrified is I'll stop that.
I mean, it's right. That's how, anyways, a lot of people in LA talk.
No, what are you talking about? What do you mean? No, we don't.
No, not like people like from LA, people who live in LA, you know, like the gentrifiers.
Okay, I mean, if you say so. I don't know. I don't talk to them. So this just came out February 21st. It was created by Marvin Lemus and Linda Yvette Chavez. And like produced by half the world. America Chavez is one of the executive producers on this. She's also in it. She also directs episodes 3 and 4. I absolutely love her. And just super quickly, there was a writer on there. Her name is Camila Maria Concepcion, who passed away. And like,
RIP baby.
Yeah, that it sucks. She worked on one of the later episodes of the show, and that sucks that they had to go through that she was going through a hard time. Like, definitely, like, self-care, reach out, and I don't know what else to say. Like, it's so hard out here sometimes.
Yeah, so RIP. I'll pour one out for you later, because it's really sad. She's very, very young, and
yeah,
you know, she's just an amazing, beautiful, and out trans writer, so
an activist. Yeah,
activist. She's a bad bitch, so yeah. RIP.
The show Gentrified is about a family and their version of an American dream, I guess. And of course, yeah, gentrification plays a huge role in this. It's kind of like the villain of the whole thing. There are basically 3 main cousins and their grandfather. Joaquin Cosio, he's incredible as Pop. And Pop is this widower and the owner of a taco shop in Boyle Heights named after his late wife, Mama Fina. So JJ Soria is Eric. He's like Pop's right-hand man. Like, he's this really well-read guy who encourages the kids in his neighborhood to read. And he's frequently found at the local library. Shout out to Library Bay again. and... yeah, that's where you can find him, like, with some books, you know what I'm saying, like, or trying to, like, help out his grandpa, like, that's his shit, that's who Eric is, and then the next person is Carlos Santos. He plays Chris. He ends up being kind of the comedic relief a lot of the time. He's been in Idaho for a long time, and he's recently returned to his old stomping grounds to work as a chef at this fancy-ass restaurant. He's obsessed with Michelin stars, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's what he looks forward to every day. But he also really wants to go to cooking school, and he's got a little bit of a privilege kick. Like, he'll call his dad and be like, are you going to pay for cooking school? No? Fuck you. You know what I mean? That type of dude, which,
yeah,
you know. But he's pretty much the whole time, he's, like, really being judged for being too white, whatever that means. For like not liking, and this is a lot of this is his words, not liking chunti music because it ends in tan tan, and not speaking Spanish very well. His efforts to change Mama Fina is like they don't always sit right with people. Like, he's kind of like, they want to make him the bad guy, they want to make him the gentrification dude a lot of the time, but he's also kind of the comedic relief the whole time, and he's, for the most part, he's trying to help, you know.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Funnily enough, Carlos Santos, the first time that I ever saw him was at this live Latinx skit show thing that they do here in LA. It's called Spanish Aquí Presents. It's like the first Friday of every month at UCB Sunset. Carlos and like three other people, I believe. They were like the leads. They were the hosts of the show, kind of. And actually, one of those hosts, he's a gay Latino. He's the bad guy at the bank later in the series.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he's like he plays that dickbag, but he's a Latino. He's a Latino, and he's queer in real life, and he's super funny. But yeah, I just thought it was really cool that like gentrification. Oh my god, gentrified is like so Spanish aquí presents. They also have a podcast on Earwolf Network, but yeah, I just wanted to mention them. Or I know right now probably like there's no big gathering, so you can't really, might not be able to go to it next month, but
don't gather, please.
Yeah, but it's a great skit show. They've had the people from One Day at a Time there lately. They've been having all the gentrification people on there, so yeah. Anyways, the next cousin, one of our favorites probably, is Carrie Martin. She's Anna, and a proud queer artist who's trying her best to navigate getting paid and appreciated for her art, but also possibly contributing to gentrification. And she's also struggling with the intersection of her queer and Latinx identity, because sometimes they contradict each other like that. All of these characters, and many of the recurring characters, I feel like they were very purposely or intentionally created as non-stereotypes. Because there's no gangbanger, there's no narco, there's no teen mom, you know what I mean? There's a chef, there's an artist, there's a literature connoisseur. Like, there's not, like, all of these characters feel so, like, I'm not going to be who you expect me to be. Which is cool. I like it. I'm down for it.
They're like, fully realized characters who aren't, you know.
Yeah. Not that you can't be. You can be a fully realized character and be a gangbanger or a narco or a teen mom. You can do that. But, like, in this, it's so purposeful not to do those things. Which I thought was interesting. So there's kind of a slow start to the series because of exposition. The gist of what's kind of established from the top is that rent is going up because of gentrification, and the shop is struggling to make enough money because they're raising the prices, and they're losing clientele because of that, quite honestly. And that clientele is losing money themselves. Like, there's no winning kind of all around, like, except for this coconut owner who's played by homeboy
coconut.
Who is Fez on That 70s Show. I forgot his name.
Fez, yes. Yeah,
whatever, he's in that, and he's like he's like the owner of this building, and he's benefiting from gentrification because like he owns these areas that used to be a lot more affordable.
Wilmer Valderrama,
that motherfucker. And so Chris, who has a business degree and all the cooking wisdom of the late Mama Fina, he wants to help change the restaurant to keep up with the changing economy. He keeps kind of like, he won't demonize gentrification, which I think is very frustrating for Eric in particular, because he's just like, you know, everything's are changing. We need to change with them. That kind of guy, like, that pisses Eric the fuck off. He's, you know, in Eric's mind, it's like, who does this whitewash motherfucker think he is? And it doesn't help that Chris, and towards the beginning of the series, he's just continuously putting his job, aka the white man, above his family duties. And that, him doing that, leaves more of a workload on Eric. And he's already upset that he can't be there for Lydia. And let's talk about Lydia. So Lydia, she's this extraordinary woman. Like, she is an educator. She's so independent. She does not need Eric, like, not even a little bit. She won't ask him for nothing. And she can take care of herself and her baby, who's on the way, and happens to be Eric's baby, too. But she kind of, like, forgets that sometimes. And, yeah, at first it kind of seems like Lydia could give a fuck about Eric. But then you realize, like, why they're so compatible. They're both such, like you know, education heads. They love books. And that's kind of Eric's big conflict, is like juggling his family life and his future baby mama that he wants a lot more with, and she's got her own life, like she just does not need him. And but back to gentrification. So Anna's home life is not unlike a lot of our own. Like, her mom is not very understanding when it comes to her art. Like, if it's not paying the bills, if it's not like, if it's keeping her daughter from helping out around the house, like, it's a problem to her, you know. So she doesn't quite like buy into the whole idea of it. So when this random problematic white gay guy comes into Anna's life and offers her mad bank to do queer Latinx art, aka everything she's always wanted to do, she's on board immediately. She's not thinking about like the long-term effects of, say, a huge mural on a local convenience store where the customers are mad homophobic. And it's easy to think like, wow, like fuck that clientele, but it's like, it's not fair to the store owner whose livelihood is being fucked with and her whole power is being taken away by this privileged white dude who is giving a lot to Anna, but he's taking from everybody else to do it. And Anna kind of becomes his personal gentrification tool. It's not fair to Anna. It's not fair to the store owner. Oh my God, the store owner. And there's only one person benefiting here. Like, it's him. It's fucking white people and gentrifiers. So, yeah. Also attached to Anna is Julissa Calderon's character.
Oh, yes.
You might recognize her from BuzzFeed. She plays Jessica, who's Anna's girlfriend and an Afro-Latina from NYC and a community activist. Like, honestly, the baddest bitch on the block, you know what I mean? We get to see a lot of their relationship origin story in episode 7.
So cute.
And we get a little bit more of it later on, but why don't we talk about episodes 7 and 8 real quick, and we can get your input, because these are two episodes that Aurora Guerrero actually directed. And you could tell right away, because this is probably when most of you first cry, these first two these 7th and 8th episodes. That's some Aurora shit right there. So why don't you tell us about 7, where we see the start of them. Yeah,
the start of them. Okay, so episodes 7 and 8 were when I was actually 100% into the show. Before that, like, again, it was a slow start for me. It was something that there was a lot of, like, stereotypes and reinforcements of stereotypes that I thought, okay, you guys are trying really hard, but I get it. And it's actually funny, so it's working, right? But it still felt very kind of gimmicky to me. It was pulling everybody in, and they have to do that. They have to pull absolutely everyone in, and it was funny at least. But episodes 7 and 8 are very deeply personal to us because we're both queer Latinx women. And I think with the writing and the directing on the and the acting, honestly, everything about these episodes, episodes 7 and 8, really changed the entire feel of the show for me. I feel like that's when the show started to talk about things that were deeply like conflicting. Like, what does it mean to be a queer Latinx artist? And what does it mean to actually try to, you know, build a queer, not build, create a queer art and put that into your community? Will your community accept your queerness? Will your community accept your brownness? Is it even about that, right? Like you said, when you try to make this art, the people often that are going to be financing you are going to be the white gentrifying people versus your own people who don't even have the, I don't know, what is it, the sources, the financial fucking backing to create this art. Yeah, they're still worried
about, like, surviving. Like, you know, they're not, you're just not their concern right now.
Exactly. And so I thought these episodes showing you brown love, showing you what it meant to be an Afro-Latina in love with a Latina in LA. And what does that mean? And how does that actually, how are you treated by your own community? If you're not wanted by your own community, you're not wanted by the white community, the queer brown community is all you have. And if you get rejected by them as well because you've joined the gentrifiers, what does it mean? It's all just very, very confusing and realistic and very true to what we do. Even, you know, we're making this queer shit, but often I have felt rejected by my own Latinx community, not the brown one, not the brown Latinx community, just the Latinx community. I've never felt a part of that because I've always just been way too gay and way too loud. And that's not how, you know, Latinx women are supposed to be. You're supposed to be quiet. You're supposed to not, you know, hold your girlfriend's hand. You're not supposed to speak. You're not supposed to, you know, as long as you are quiet about your sexuality, you'll be accepted. Whereas, you know, these characters are being allowed. These characters are not hiding their sexuality. They're fully in it. They're living it. They're fucking chingonas. They're cabronas. They're out here. So I thought episode 7, painting this mural outside of this liquor store, and then all of the fucking hate that she's getting from homophobic fucking Latinos, which is a real thing we have to deal with, and it's not something that is ever fucking discussed in TV. So what did you think about this episode? I'm obsessed. I've rewatched it 2 times. It's made me cry. Like, it's just, it's a lot for me.
It's tough when it's an established relationship. So like Anna and Jessica are so established from the top that I hadn't felt attached to them until this episode, because you see them as kids, you know, you see them mm-hmm. connecting and like how authentic that was. And then you see them having real ass problems now because they're different people with different priorities. And yeah, like that, I thought it was great to see them in those lights. I especially like that it starts tying in other parts of the story really, really well. And then the next episode, because this whole time, like, you don't know what to make of Anna's mom. You have a lot of, like, bad guy redemption arcs in this. Anna's mom is one of those. I'll talk about another one after that, because episode 8 is kind of a lot about Anna's mom, and it's totally needs discussing, and I know you have a lot to say about it. I love that I finally felt connected to that couple at that point, even though it was to mm-hmm. kind of highlight the big problems with Anna's thinking. And honestly, like Jessica, like she says it later, like she's made out to be this bad guy, but she's not. She's probably the purest of them all.
Yeah, we love Jessica. I mean, yeah. And moving on to the next episode, it centers around Anna's mother, played by Laura Patalano. We love her. We love her. Okay. She played the mother in Mosquita and Mari. And we had Aurora Guerrero on the episode where we talked about mothers. We talked about immigrant mothers. What is their life like? And so for me, this was like one of the most important stories I've ever seen on television. I'm not hyping this. This is just something that I cried a lot in this episode as well, because in this episode, we get to see Anna's mother, who is a sweatshop worker in a like dress shop where they're not even allowed to go to the restroom unless it's like their break time. So say you have to pee, which is normal. Humans pee. You can't even go. You have to hold it. You cannot leave the building. You have to keep working. And it highlights the realities of immigrant mothers and the conditions they're working in just to put fucking food on the table, just for survival. Often these women are undocumented. They're not just Latinas. There's all types of women, undocumented women, working under these incredibly stupid, harsh conditions. And it's just highlighted the reality of my own mother when she worked in a pillow sweatshop. So for me, it means a lot to see this, to see her have her own voice, see this woman have her own story, see her become low-key like a revolutionary by the end of this episode. She's becoming a badass woman by the end of this. It's a small step, but it's the step that she's able to take in a very hard, complicated place with a lot of, like, I don't know, she's very vulnerable in society, and if she moves any like way that's wrong, perceived incorrectly, she's losing her entire livelihood and potentially getting thrown out of the country, potentially losing her income, her house, everything. So it's very important that we saw this woman go from being labor unions, and then by the end of it, she is all about making space and community and making a union in a very small way. But for a woman to make even that kind of a step, it's humanizing the women that are often demonized in this entire fucking society. So I'm obsessed. I love this episode. This episode, mwah, chef's kiss. Good job, guys. This is one of the best things I've seen. And I want more stories about mothers personally, because I love my mom, and we all love moms, right? And I just want to see moms out here winning.
It also brings in this part of the story where she has to bring home her work a lot of the time, and she has her daughter's help. And that's the reason that she's always getting into it with her daughters, because yes, she wants her help. She needs her help. She's been busting her ass all day, and, you know,
to feed them.
Yeah. To do everything to survive. Mm-hmm. And like that whole bringing the work to your daughters and then like passing on this legacy that you don't really want to pass on. Like me, like, hit me, because like I used to go and help my mom at work anytime that I had a day off from school, you know. I used to do that too, and it was just like, fuck, like, how many of you fucking privileged ass kids are out here like working at 10? Like, none of you, man. Like, none of you. So I,
they're not out here cleaning these houses,
exactly.
Right? Like, what the fuck?
So, yeah, I love that they brought that in. I love how they humanize her, and they do the same thing with another guy moving on a little bit, or moving back a little bit. There's a mariachi named Javier, and he is not making money off of his mariachi stuff like he used to. People don't want to hear him anymore. The new people that are in town, aka the gentrifiers, they don't care for the classics anymore. So he has to, like, you know, deal with having to change the way, you know, doing the same thing that all these other businesses are doing, like changing for the economy, the changing economy, or whatever that Chris had said. So he has to, like, start singing these, like, more modern songs in a mariachi style, and but he's so pissed about it. And you don't like him because all you've seen of him thus far is him, like, throwing chips in people's faces and being really rude to everyone that tries to help him, or everybody that's trying to survive just like him. Like, he's so mad, but you don't know that it's because of the situation he's in. Because of all that's going on, he's being hit almost, like, really harder than most of these other people. He's lost his home. His wife has had to go back to Mexico, like, because he just can't support her right now. And, like, he's having to potentially move his child out of his home, like, his home area, not even just his physical home, but, like, move him out to Bakersfield. One, this show really hates, like, Inland Empire and Bakersfield. Basically, anything outside of LA, fuck that shit, you know what I mean? I thought that it was super funny. They're like, Riverside, what's in Riverside? Fuck Riverside. Shout out to Inland Empire. Anyways, so, he's totally justified to have all that anger. And even when he goes to Jessica for housing help, and he's an asshole to her. But Jessica's like, dude, like, I know what you're going through is hard as fuck. Here's what I can do for you. And, yeah, I like that they redeem both of those characters who we just don't understand. We don't understand why they're being such dicks. We don't understand why she throws away those paints, you know, until we see their side of the story.
And it's not just that. I think when we go back to episode 8, the conversation that Anna has with her mother, because, you know, Anna's mother is very kind of, as all immigrant mothers, they think that your little art project is cute, but they think it's just that. They don't see that, you know, they don't see a future in creative things. They see things, they want you to have a practical job that pays the bills constantly and that you're safe. You know, they want you to be safe. They want you to be on paying your bills on time and living a very structured life, because theirs isn't. And yet at the same time, she's bringing home this work, and Nana is pushing back the idea of, you know, the immigrants have this idea of survival. They have to. But we as their children want to live versus survive. You know, I don't think if you saw that clip, that was all over Twitter. Yeah, about survival and immigrant parents. And it was a really interesting conversation that you don't see, right? We're not highlighted. We don't talk about these things. We're an immigrant daughter and an immigrant person. Like, they're just having that very real conversation of survival versus life and living. And what does that mean now? Because you brought me here and I didn't really want to be here. I had no choice, right? So what are we doing? What is this? We have to find a balance. And that's what I think the entire show is trying to do, is have that conversation of, why am I here if you wanted a better life and it's not better? It's not getting better for us either, right? We're also struggling to survive just like you. And we also have a different concept of freedom and life and living and how we want to spend our time working, you know, because we've seen our parents bust their ass. Do we want to bust ass in that same way? Are we still living in that same pattern of incredible labor for what kind of, like, money, what kind of pay, what are we doing with our life? So it's a complicated conversation that they're having, one of the many.
Yeah.
They're having so many in the show, so many. That's just one.
And on the flip side, you know, if you do go whatever, either a practical route or a route that makes you a lot of money, who are you going to become? Because, like, Chris's dad is a terrible example of a Latino at this point. And the coconut dude played by Wilmer Valderrama or whatever, like, assholes, right? Like, do you become the problem or do you deal with the problem? It's like, there's no winning, like, honestly. And
because for us, it's still about survival. Everyone in the show is still surviving, the kids, the adults, all of us in this community. There's no winning.
So I feel like I don't know where they're gonna go with this, I'm looking forward to season two. This show turned out to be so much better than I expected.
Same.
Yeah, I love it. I think you should all watch it. There are some moments that people have talked about where they aren't the kindest to characters that are not Mexican, that are like Central American, for example. So that's shit. But yeah, just have be warned about that. I haven't super looked into those moments or whatever. But yeah, like there's some, they talk about like a Venezuelano towards the beginning. I remember that, where they're like, he's more Mexican than you, Chris. But yeah.
Yeah, that's when I was kind of like, those beginning episodes were kind of like, this is gimmicky, kind of cliches. We're buying into them. It's working. People saw it, right? Like, Cardi B knows the hint of how it exists now. So
they mentioned Cardi B in it, too. The mariachis are like, what should we do next, Cardi B?
Yeah, and she retweeted that tweet and was like, yo, I love this. Mm-hmm. Like, what is this, you know? So hopefully she watches it and shouts them out. To me, it's already a shout-out. She retweeted,
you know what,
that.
Like, I'm okay with the cliche shit, because, you know what, our names are Cabronas y Chingonas. Like,
yeah, we're still, that's what I'm saying.
Like, there's still more nuisance. we have levels, you know what I mean? We're not just one thing.
Yeah, no, and, you know, all of these characters, I love it. It feels lived in. These people don't feel like stereotypes. They feel like actual humans. They're all very nuanced. They're all very different and layered. And Lee, bro. I love him. That's his library bay name, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, he's reclaimed his own name, Libro. We love Cholos de Reed. Shout out to all of that. Honestly, one of the surprise favorite characters out of this entire show, we go back to the grandfather. I'm really impressed by what they have his character doing, dealing with, handling as a, you know, a widowed single Mexican man, right? Like, I've never seen a man like that just exist and cry and be healthy. So it was a great, you know, changing of the stereotypes. Here was a sensitive, kind grandfather who's able to handle everybody, and also is learning to find love again and find himself. And I think that was a very beautiful character. I'm never gonna know what that's like, you hoes. Again, I reiterate, all you hoes with self-esteem, I don't know none about that, but you know what, one day I'm gonna be like him, and I can't wait. So
yo, he's the best. Him and Eric's like more like emotional talks, unheard of. Like, you know, like, so this, like,
unheard of,
like, deep love that they feel for these women, you know what I mean? It's so highlighted and
open to their sensitivities.
Yeah, and they talk about it together, you know, and it's not like there's no like violent struggling to get through the machismo-ness. Like, they get right down to it, you know. Pops is the best. Pops, like, he's kind to everyone. He loves and accepts Anna, like, no questions asked. He supports his coconut grandson, Chris. Like, you know what I mean? I just think...
He supported the people that were boycotting him. He was like, we're going to
like, Pops can do no wrong in my eyes. You know what I mean? So, no, of course, I'm not going to say what the ending is, but of course, that ending, we should have seen coming what was going to get us the worst, and that was what got us the worst, man.
It got us the worst.
So,
I mean... Imagine having that kind of like male father figure in your life. Like, can't relate to you hoes.
Never seen it, never heard of it. Now I have Pops. I'm just gonna pretend that I got that. Anyways,
when I go to therapy eventually, I'll be like, I just want to be him when I grow up, because, you know, therapy, generational trauma, break it.
Exactly.
But anyways, I don't know. You hoes out here with father figures that loved y'all and were supportive and kind, I don't know. Shout out to y'all, though.
Great for you.
Can't wait to be that person for someone else.
Yeah,
I love
but
it.
no cafecitos, quite honestly. I'm going to just go ahead and say that. No cafecitos for me. I really like the series, and it's not, I mean, like, yeah, I have more love for other shows for sure, but I was just so incredibly impressed by this show. This is one to fucking watch, you know what I mean?
Yes, 5 pan dulces. Slow start, but once you get in it, you're in it, and it just catches you off guard. And that's just the writing. I was like, I don't know, like, the best kind of surprise in a show.
Yeah, like,
in a series, you know.
Marvin, one of the creators, he directed the first 2 episodes. 3 and 4 were directed by America Chavez. Oh my god, not Chavez, America Ferreira. And 5 and 6 were by Marta Cunningham. She's a woman of color. 7 and 8 by Aurora, our favorite, and 9 and 10 by Andrew Ahn. So, like, no straight cis white men whatsoever. Like,
We love it. Yeah. Wow, chef's kiss, you guys. Like, five pan dulces. It's a great show. Y'all should watch it, and watch it with the people that gave you trauma. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe don't, because that's bad. But, you know. Or imagine that they're your family, like Pops.
Okay. Well, that's enough depression. Anyways. I hope that this was a decent reprieve from everything that's going on. You're not having to be super miserable during your self-quarantine, if that's what you're doing. If you have to go out there, dude, like, power to you. Stay safe. Reach out. I'm probably going to have plenty of free time. Reach out. DM us at CYC Podcast.
Yes.
And please leave us a review, rating, if you have some extra time as well. Like, that helps so much. Reviews are the freest, most amazing thing that you can do for us. Less free is our Patreon, patreon.com/CYC podcast, where we have like 36 episodes of extra content that you can listen to if you want to do that. It's like $3 if you want to just binge it in a month, you know. Yes. And we also have merch if you want to have it delivered to you instead of going shopping at the mall, because why would you do that right now?
Don't do that.
We have a sweater, which I just got mine in, and it's super soft. We have shirts. I think we're gonna have some new shirts coming out soon as well, more summery vibe. Yes. Just to give a little teaser there, and so check all that out. But most importantly, just give us a review on iTunes. That'll kill.
Yes, please rate and review us on iTunes. It's very important that it's iTunes. Find it. If you don't know how, DM us. We'll tell you how. but yeah, make sure to follow your girls on the Instagrams at, I don't
know. you don't know your at, no?
I was going to say the CYC one.
I already said that one.
Oh, okay. Well, shit. Follow me at Fried Papita on Twitter.
I'm at MYTE Panda, Mite the Panda on Twitter and Instagram. You can see me get really bored and do TikToks. So, yeah.
Bye, guys.
Bye.